Renowned British composer Leopold Stokowski once said, "A painter paints pictures on canvas, but musicians paint their pictures on silence." We love the images that this quote conjures up. We love how it tries to grasp at how different art forms construct images, ideas, and stories in our minds.
We believe that the power of collaboration can emphasize this effect, and so decided to conduct an experiment.
We brought together postgraduate creative writing students from the University of Lincoln for this research project.
11 writers, 3 months, one project. Could we collaboratively write a literary podcast in the epistolary form? Could we use a writer's room dynamic to create a series, one letter at a time? We ask you to decide.
Follow us as we discover our fifth letter, written and read out by MA Creative Writing graduate Beth Parker. I am Amy Lilwall.
And I am Sherezade Garcia Rangel. And this is On Silence.
Care of 15 Dalston Green Road, Hammersmith, London, E17, 5AE, 3rd of January, 1992. Mama, I'm writing to you from the address of an acquaintance because the squat isn't safe for you to reply to me at. Letters frequently go missing or do not reach us. Money was stolen from the birthday card Sophie's mother sent. This deeply saddened Sophie. She became upset by the selfishness and cruelty of some people. Checks that our fellow inhabitants rely on mysteriously disappear, meaning their lifelines are severed abruptly. There are around 20 permanent residents living in the building. Still, there's an unsettled and unpleasant element of untrustworthy individuals who gravitate here now and again. We have a padlock on our door which ensures our safety. The building is close to the city's hustle and bustle. It is noisy, and we often feel a grave sense of turbulence. Before we took it over, the building was once a government office. Filing cabinets, desks and chairs remain in some rooms, and many secrets are left abandoned within shared spaces. A substantial amount of tiles are missing from the roof. The top floor needs to be fixed. It is not fit for human dwelling. Pigeons have nested, leaving remains that become toxic. We are considering finding something more suitable for a child. It can be dangerous here. I want to provide Reuben stability and love, not fear and vulnerability. We are looking into renting land in Spain or Portugal. There are growing communities out there and the weather is beautiful all year round. We will pick olives. I'm in contact with a farm owner in Andalusia and I thought this had significance. He is looking for self-reliant people to help with his farm's general running and upkeep. They have a small child too. A friend for Reuben, maybe. We have options, Mama. Will you visit once we are there? It would be just like the old days. I fear institutional corruption. Woefully, I see this all over London. The city is one big corporation. One big lie. It is chaos. I see this not only in the UK, but on a global scale. In London, I feel deprived of liberty. I'm afraid for the little freedom we have left. You taught Lucia and me to fight for our beliefs, to be strong and to love. We must fight for our liberty and rebel against the state. We must ensure our freedom does not disappear, as do our letters. I hope that your love is not lost, Mama. I hope you have remained the courageous and determined woman you were when we last met, the woman you have always been. I await your response to this letter informing me that you have contacted Lucia and all is well. Write back soon. Your son, Matthew.
Sherazade had the opportunity to catch up with Beth about her letter and about her experience as part of the On Silence writing team.
Hello, Beth.
Hello.
Writer of letter number 4, am I right?
You're right.
Fantastic. Thank you for joining us to talk about your letter. This is a strange project that I sort of invited you to participate, but I want to hear from your perspective. Why did you first want to join this project?
Thank you for having me. I think I felt that I didn't want the MA to end. In fact, I know I didn't want the MA to end. So it was like grasping at anything else that was on offer that I could take.
Yeah.
I sometimes feel that if I leave writing for a period of time, my creativity kind of tends to dwindle. So I wanted to just keep going with it. Mm-hmm.
So that was the main reason. And this gave you that opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fantastic. What interested you? So this was a choice, like you were saying, very personal, like I want to keep going. So that provided an opportunity. But is there anything about the project itself that interested you?
I think the fact that family and that it was lots of different parts and lots of different times. Mm-hmm. And this particular character, Matthew, when it was kind of set in the 90s, I was like, right, that's my era. I want to do that because I can picture the 90s like they were yesterday. So yeah, that's what I took an interest
that's
in.
You took it in. Fantastic. Did you bring in the 90s into the project or was that something that came up?
I can't remember whether or not that was,
I think, the
a date that was given.
Yeah,
so
might have been.
Yeah.
Fantastic. You, for this letter, so you actually wrote 2, but we're talking about letter 4 on this time. For this letter, you were part of group 1, which was the group of 4 writers that were tasked with responding to the first letter that was commissioned and working out the narrative seeds that were planted there, decided what to take up forward, were the first one to bring in their ideas to our system of the brain trust, where other writers got to tell you what they thought. What was that experience like?
I'm just remembering back as you're talking to me. It was kind of like, right, we've been given this first letter. We could do anything with it. What do we do? Where do we go? Who are we? So it was trying to find the characters, pick characters from going through that first letter with a fine tooth comb and working out who we wanted to be, who was there, what was happening, so asking all those kind of questions. And the group of 4 was a perfect size, perfect people to work with, and the collaboration worked really well. And I think we settled quite quickly on what we were doing. Mm. So it all fell into place really naturally.
Yeah, I remember listening as in the background as you were discussing, and it sort of seemed to fall quite easily who was writing which letter, from what character's perspective.
Yeah.
That seemed to sort of happen in a way. What expectations did you have before writing the first letter about how the process of getting feedback from the brain trust would be, what the other writers were saying? I mean, this is a highly collaborative project where the ideas are both your own and not. So I'm curious about how you went about managing that.
So being introduced to the, we knew who the brain trust were, obviously, yeah, because everyone was on the course together. It was a weird concept at first, and I don't know if anyone else had done anything like that before. I certainly hadn't done anything like that before, so it was weird to be the kind of the first little cohort to be group one and then have the feedback from the brain trust. But by the moving forward, by the end of it, it again just worked out really well and it was perfect, because I think when you're working on something, it's like supervision. You just need people to point things out, move things around, things that don't work well, things that do work well. And the feedback was vital for us all to move forwards. And yeah, it worked really well.
Absolutely. That's definitely the case. I want to talk about the letter itself. And I want to start with the pigeons. I start with the pigeons because letter one has the storks. And it seems like such a high contrast between that environment of, you know, the summer, Eastern Europe, this very specific migratory bird, with the pigeons, which is a city bird. You know, we are in the city, we're in London, and Matthew has a lot to tell us about London. Can you walk me through that image and finding that space?
So at the back of my house, in a city centre, there is a house that someone lives in with a massive hole in the roof that pigeons fly in and out of all the time.
Yeah.
And I was having a conversation with a neighbour as we were watching it one day, and they said that the toxicity in that roof would be unbelievable. There'll be carcasses and it won't be fit for someone to be living in there, and there is. So just that idea came
from... You anchored it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really amazing, because Amy was talking about anchoring the storks also on an experience she had, which talks about how us writers were collecting images and information and situations to sort of then, you know, blend them into our creative work. I want to know a bit about Matthew. Can you tell us about him?
So touching on what you've just said about writing, I haven't really written that much that's fiction. Mine has kind of been non-fiction and memoir. So I, back to the 90s, took kind of bits and bobs from where I was sort of homeless when it was, I think, a bit after 1992. So imagining myself that age in the 90s, whose mother was an activist, and maybe he'd grown up as an activist's child, so he'd been taken to protests, and he was that was kind of era for a lot of protests in the 90s. So with my Matthew head on, I thought, right, let's put him in a squat. Let's want him not to particularly be there and travel to Spain or Portugal, where a lot of people did go to move on from squatting in London. So it was all kind of from things that I'd heard or experienced myself, piecing them together.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, there is quite a beautiful, very different environment in this letter. And Matthew comes across as this dreamer, really connected to his mother, even though they are estranged. What can you tell us about that silence of that estrangement, which seems to be part of the themes of the story, letter by letter?
For me, I felt that there was this closeness between Matthew and his mother that, for whatever reason, when they were torn apart as a son, he was still a little boy. And he was just held by his mother emotionally, but physically they were, you know, in different parts of the world. And he just wanted to be that little boy again and held by his mother, and wanted the past to, wanted the family to reunite. That's all he wanted. He wanted family.
Yeah. And we see that in his interaction with Sophie and her little boy. He's thinking about what he needs to provide. He's thinking about as a father to this child. And he begins to dream. Tell us about Spain and his dream of Portugal, of summer, of a farm.
So I was thinking of the weather, like we've got today. It's raining outside. It's grey and horrible. You know, and as a parent as well, I would love to take my daughter away to a kind of nicer climate, to, I believe that everyone's happier in the sun. And so as myself, as Matthew, I thought, right, he's going to get out of London and he's going to go and live in the sun somewhere with his family, and everyone will be happy.
Yeah. You placed him in such a vulnerable position. He talks about fear, about being vulnerable and not wanting that, to pass on, ending that.
Yeah.
That is, he's in the darkness looking towards the light, isn't he, Matthew, yeah, in this letter?
Yeah.
Yeah. As well as holding on to family. He wants a communication again. He wants a retrenchment, kind of let's come together, let's remember who we were. You can feel the love in the letter, and you can feel him, like you were saying earlier, sort of changing age as he goes on, something very mature, like, I need to provide for this boy and for Sophie, for myself. And these reflections, these very kind of activist reflections about London, and that is beyond, the problem is bigger than this one place and this situation he's in. Fantastic. I want to know about nostalgia. There's a lot of nostalgia. He sort of speaks about it. He doesn't directly bring a memory out, but he sort of talks about this feeling of how we were. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
I think that's a part of me again. Just really wanted to go back to the 90s. I think that's what it is. Like, because I was in his, I'd taken on that character while I was writing the letter.
Yeah.
And it was, 90s were the best time. So I just, that's why I did that.
It's interesting to look back at the 90s from this perspective as well, of 2023.
Yeah.
Can I also ask about his core beliefs? I mean, he seems quite traditional in a way about family, obviously in a perhaps a non-traditional environment at the moment. But when he speaks about this community in the squad, he talks about community. He talks about community being disrupted, but it is clear that he sees the possibility of community here, and it didn't pan out. Tell us about that.
So I think he's someone that doesn't particularly follow laws and rules, but he's got morals.
Yeah.
So when there's this element that sometimes come into the squat and steal things, he doesn't like that. Mm. But he's been brought up kind of in communities with his sister and his mother, so that's what he's used to. He likes to be around people. He's got a partner and a son. And then when hopefully they go to Spain, he'll be living and working on the land within a community as well.
Mm.
So as much as he doesn't like to follow laws and rules, there is a sense that he does and feels safe in that kind of environment that's enclosed and has systems.
Yeah.
So it contradicts itself.
It does, doesn't it? Quite perhaps regimented place that has this kind of alternative possibility in it. But the alternative possibility in itself also doesn't pan out for him. His dream life future. Obviously, the listener will listen a bit more about Matthew going forward. And you had to collaborate with a writer who writes from the perspective of Matthew to make sure that we have the same voice.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that process?
I think it was quite a tricky process, that two writers are one character, and I don't know how that works sort of outside an education setting, how people write. So say you've got one writer for Doctor Who or two writers for Doctor Who, you can tell when a different writer comes in. So when the Brain Trust, when we all had conversations about that, you could tell that there were two different writers. So in order to compromise and make both the letters more similar, I just went through the other letter that was written as Matthew and tried to include some of the words. Oh, I can't think.
The words he would use, the kind of vocabulary.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Sorry, the vocabulary that was used by the second writer. And I think by the end of it was just a few kind of changes and alterations to the form of sentences. It was it was worked out in the end.
Fantastic. Would you do something like this again?
Definitely.
Write collaboratively again?
Yeah, I don't need to think about it, yeah.
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 It was enjoyable.
Very enjoyable, yeah, definitely.
Is there any way in which it has changed your own writing?
I think We finished this, I would say, what, 6 weeks ago, maybe?
Yeah, about two.
And then I printed the letters off to read. And the first letter from Matthew was written a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And my writing since then has progressed because I read it and thinking, why have I written that? And I can even tell a difference between my first, because I'm reading two letters, my first letter and my second letter.
Letter 13.
Yeah, so it's improved my writing. It's helped me. It was really good to work with other writers, to read different writers' styles, just to have that communication with other people, listen to people's ideas, have that sense of community of writers within the university setting, work with teachers, tutors, supervisors as well. I definitely do. Yeah, it's been brilliant.
Fantastic. I have two more questions for you and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay.
The first one is, if you could write a letter to anyone, and I think I know the answer to this, I'm not sure. If you could write a letter to anyone, who would it be?
I don't know.
It could be anyone, famous, not famous, someone you know, someone you don't know, someone who's alive, someone who isn't.
All right. Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam.
All right. I didn't know that answer.
Yeah, who played at Rock City in around 1992 when they only played there once. He crowd surfed.
Right.
Across, I would write a letter to him beforehand to say, can we please, because they were quite a small band then,
yeah.
Can we meet you, can we arrange to meet you backstage or something like can that, arrange imagine? To meet him.
And the origin of Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
My final question. If you could receive a letter from anyone, who would you like to receive a letter from?
Eddie Vedder saying, yeah, meet you backstage. Rock City in 1992.
Very 90s way to wrap this up. Thank you so much for talking to me about your letter and your process.
Thank you.
On Silence is a research project and a literary podcast written and produced in collaboration with postgraduate creative writing students at the University of Lincoln in the UK. In episode 6, we will discover more about this intriguing story. You will have the chance to listen to our 6th letter and to learn more about the process of writing it in an interview with the writer. Follow us on X, previously Twitter, at U of L Writing to keep up with our stories and to learn more about the podcast. This episode was produced and edited by me.
Our theme song is a Slovakian folk song performed by a Slovakian folk band with choir and recorded by FX Pro Sound. You also listened to the sound of a Slovak national instrument called fujara, played by František Krestenik and recorded by Ondrosek. These are licensed under the Creative Commons 4.0 international license, whose song and audio credits are available on the description of this episode.
Episode 6 will be coming out soon. We look forward to you hearing it. Listen and explore the power of storytelling and the things left unsaid. I am Amy Lowell.
And I am Sheresaya Garcia Rangel. And this is On Silence.